underwater spelunking. Underwater spelunking. That's what we're going to be talking about this morning. Now, it's a bit of a niche sport. You're probably not all too familiar with it. And it basically combines two things: exploring caves with scuba diving. Most people call it by that, cave diving. It's kind of a more popular term, but I really like underwater spelunking. It's just got this complicated feel to it. It's not that popular of a sport, primarily because it's really dangerous. I mean, exploring caves is dangerous. Scuba diving is dangerous. You put them together and you kind of get all sorts of danger that you're getting yourselves into. The most important safety element, if you're going to go cave diving, so write this down, is called a guideline. Okay? It's a little piece of line, a little piece of string that the dive leader will tie to a fixed point outside the cave and unroll as he explores the cave, so that then if divers get confused or disoriented, or if they stir up all the silt in the cave and you can't see anything, you can follow that line back out to safety. All the research I did online says that the number one fatality for cave divers is caused by not having a guideline. All right, so next time you go cave diving, don't forget your guideline. It's very important. Well, good morning. My name's Paul Taylor. I'm the college pastor here at PBC, and it's great to be with you, to share the word with you. And don't worry, we're going to be talking about more than just underwater spelunking this morning. Last week, we continued forward from our missions conference, trying to continue the theme of outreach and ask, how do we reach out to our world? We looked at 1 Corinthians 9, and we asked the question, what does it look like to become all things to love people? How do we adapt ourselves to people? There's one big question that I didn't address intentionally, and a lot of people asked me about it after the service, and it basically goes along the lines of, well, okay, I adapt myself to someone else, but how far do I go? How far do we go? I got questions like, well, are you saying I should become a drug dealer to reach drug dealers? Or should I become an alcoholic in order to love alcoholics? And I'm actually pleased that people are asking these questions, because these are the types of questions I think we need to be asking. If I could have been misunderstood in one direction last week, this is the direction I would have chosen. That we think the idea is so radical that we're supposed to become exactly like someone for the sake of loving them. This kind of takes seriously the importance and the boldness with which Paul talks about what he does in 1 Corinthians 9. So this is the question we'll primarily be talking about this week. How do I love others without sacrificing who I am? What does it look like to adapt myself without forgetting who I am? And we're going to follow the underwater spelunker as our guide, which kind of fits well with the Little Mermaid theme from last week, right? We're kind of an underwater series is what we're doing. We're going to look at two broad themes as we talk about this: anchoring and exploring. How do you anchor yourself, but how do you have the freedom and courage to explore? You can't explore without an anchor. Just like the underwater spelunker fixes a line outside the cave, we want to learn how to do that as we become like others. To do this, we're going to look at Philippians 2, 5 through 8. Philippians 2, 5 through 8. It's on page 1162 in the Bibles in your pews. This is, of course, the famous underwater spelunking passage in the Bible. And it describes Jesus' incarnation, how he became human, how he became like us to love us. Last week, we saw Paul talking about this principle, how to become like others to love them. This week, we're going to look at Jesus as the supreme example of that, demonstrating how that works. And we're going to hope to discover a little more about how that might work for us. I'll start by reading our passage. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself. He became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Well, Paul begins in verse 5 by saying that Jesus is our example. He's a model for us to follow. That's a relatively common idea. I mean, even people that don't believe in Jesus or profess Christianity will say that Jesus was a good guy. He provides a good example that we should follow. But the particular path that we're told to emulate isn't one that most people are willing to follow or talk about following. It's not often you have books with titles like How to Give Your Life for Those Who Hate You. But that's what Jesus did. He's not upwardly mobile. He's not climbing the ranks. He's downwardly descending. And that's the path we're told to emulate. As we strive to become like other people in order to love them, we're going to lose something. Adapting yourself to others is a sacrifice. It doesn't come naturally. But Jesus' life shows us a picture of what that love can look like. So it makes sense then that we want to study Jesus' life, to be engrossed in his life, praying that we might be changed by seeing how he lived. And that's exactly where we're headed next at PBC. Next week, Scott Grant is going to start a series on Hebrews 1 and 2 to look in depth at the incarnation of Christ, preparing us for Christmas, asking questions about how that works and what that looks like. In the new year, Scott's going to start a new series, walking us through the Gospel of Mark, trying to engross us in Jesus' life as we strive to follow Jesus so that we can understand how Jesus loved and learn how we can love. So this morning, we want to find out how Jesus models our principle of becoming like others to love them. The passage starts out with a description of Jesus as being in very nature God. The New American Standard renders the Greek a little more literally. It says he existed in the form of God. And that can be kind of confusing for us sometimes, because when we think of form, we think of the external appearance of something, but that doesn't necessarily correspond to what that thing is. So if I take a marshmallow and I form it in the shape of a snowman, I have a marshmallow in the form of a snowman, but it's still a marshmallow. Well, the Greek word works differently. It's not used that way. The Greek word highlights the external appearance that corresponds to the internal reality. It means being something in its entirety. So when it talks about Jesus as being in the form of God, it says that Jesus was God, but it's highlighting the external appearance. And what it's probably talking about is how God was pictured, how his external appearance was demonstrated in the Old Testament, the glory of Yahweh. So what's pictured here then is Jesus existing before he became a man, what's often called the pre-incarnate or the pre-existent Christ. And it pictures him clothed with the glory of Yahweh, standing in heaven next to his Father, with whom he created the universe, clothed with the glory of the God of the universe. It's the glory that Jesus talks about in John 17:5. He asks the Father, glorify me in your presence with the glory that I had with you before the world began. It's the glory that if you were to just look at it, it would kill you from its sheer beauty. The glory that Moses just barely caught a glimpse of, and that changed him completely. It's what the author of Hebrews talks about when he calls Jesus the radiance of God's glory. We're going to look at that next week. It's Jesus, before he became a man, clothed in splendor, wearing the garments of the God of the Old Testament, shining unimaginable glory. Jesus, the beloved Son of the Creator of the universe. Can you see that picture? That's Jesus. Jesus is God. And that was Jesus' anchor as he explored. He knew who he was. Jesus knew who he was. And that's a big deal. Jesus' identity is no small matter. Essentially, the first 300 years of Christianity was spent trying to figure out how to articulate just who Jesus was. How do we use language that makes sense in talking about this guy? It's still debated today in all sorts of circles. Everybody wants to know, who is Jesus? Well, even if everybody else is asking that question, Jesus isn't. He knows who he is, and his identity anchors him. Well, this is part of our problem as we try to become like other people. We're a culture of people who don't know ourselves. Just look around. We're fixated on finding out who we are. I'm curious, if I ask the question, are you INFP or ESTJ? How many of you know what I'm talking about? If For those of you that don't, it's the Myers-Briggs. It's a standard personality test. But these types of things are just part of our culture. They're standard conversation among us. We want to find out, who are we? How do I classify myself? Am I phlegmatic or choleric? Am I red or green? Am I a lion or am I a horse? I did a search on Amazon.com for books on personality tests, and I found some great best-selling books. Titles like 90 Easy to Score Quizzes That Reveal the Real You. That's pretty promising. What color is your personality? Red, orange, yellow, or green? And this is my favorite. Are You Crazy? 18 Scientific Quizzes to Test Yourself. I'm not sure what you do if you get a yes. I don't know where you go next. But I think we're so obsessed with finding out who we are because we just don't know. We're just not secure in our identity. We don't know who we are. But Jesus was different. He knew who he was. He was anchored in his identity, and that anchor gave him freedom. He was anchored in his identity, which gave him freedom. The second part of verse 6 reads, he did not consider equality with God a thing to be grasped. What does that mean? What does it mean to grasp something? It means that he didn't consider his being God something to hold on to fervently, to protect. The grasping hand is a picture of something that has to hold on to its treasure because of the uncertainty of keeping it. It's a picture of instability, of insecurity, of worry and anxiety. But Jesus is a picture of security. He knew who he was, so much so that he could give it up. And this is the secret that we're trying to learn as we become like others to love them. To become like them, we need to be secure in who we are. If I'm not secure in who I am, then adapting myself to someone else becomes very threatening. Think about our underwater spelunker. If his line is his anchor as he explores, if he loses that line and the cave silts out where he has no visibility, he's lost. He's not exploring anymore. He's lost. Chances are he'll never make it back from that cave. I found online a sign that's actually posted underwater at the entrance to many caves. And it has this big picture of a grim reaper on it with several drowned scuba divers underneath him. And it has these words, stop, prevent your death, go no farther. It's pretty serious language. It then explains that if you don't have a guideline with you, you have no business entering this cave. You must be anchored to explore. And this is the danger for us. As we adapt ourselves to others, if we're not anchored, we're going to forget who we are. And we won't be exploring, we'll be lost. If I become a drug dealer to love drug dealers, I've got nothing to offer. I'm lost. I'm trapped in their world. I've become like him, but there's no line to lead us out. As we adapt ourselves to others, we need an anchor so that we can offer those people something. That anchor is our identity. One of our other problems then, in terms of being secure in our identity, is maybe you do know who you are, but you don't like who you are. And this is a big problem for us. We desperately want to be different. This is what advertisers play on. You don't have to be who you are. You don't have to look the way you look. You can be this other person on TV or on this billboard. Our consumer culture intentionally breeds discontent around our identity. We're taught not to like ourselves, so that somebody can make money trying to make us into somebody else. This is the culture that we live in. We're taught not to like ourselves. And I see this in my life all the time. I still look at people at times and think, you know, if only I were more like this person, I'm sure I'd feel better about myself. I'm sure I wouldn't have these insecurities that I have. In high school, I moved from Connecticut to Houston. And after a brief period of disappointment, I got excited because I thought of it as an opportunity to become a new person in a new place. I can start all over because I didn't really like who I was. And here was a chance to change myself. But if we don't like who we are, then adapting ourselves to other people, it's not a way to love them. It's a way to get them to like us. It's not love, it's manipulation. It's not about them, it's about me. I become like them, hoping desperately that they might like me in return. And that's not love. That's hypocrisy. And that's another question people asked me last week after my sermon. Well, isn't it hypocritical to act like someone else to love them? And I'd say, yes, it is hypocritical to act like someone else, especially if you're doing it to try to get them to like you. That's hypocrisy, acting like someone whom you're not. But we're talking about love here. We're talking about loving people. If I'm trying to love people on the chess team, should I pretend to like chess to love them? No, I don't think so. I think you should develop a real liking for chess, to be in their world. I don't pretend to be interested in what they're interested in. I get interested in what they're interested in. And if this is our goal, if our goal is love, to really love people, then we're going to get interested in what they're interested in because we're interested in them as people. When I was in high school, I was on the wrestling team. And my mother hated wrestling, probably because for the first 2 or 3 years of my career, she had to watch me get pinned in under 10 seconds pretty much every match. And she never pretended like she liked this sport of wrestling that I'd chosen. But she started to get interested in it. Because she was interested in me, she got interested in what I was interested in. As she loved me, she became like me. And as she became like me, she loved me. Well, if we're anchored in our identity, then we're able to adapt. We're able to adapt ourselves to others without sacrificing who we are. And our identity is who God has made us as new creations, as bearers of His image, made like our Father, and then newly created. Our identity is Christ. Our anchor is Christ. But some of us aren't well anchored in that identity. Some of us don't know that real well yet. And that's okay, because it's a process. Learning to understand God's love, learning to live in that identity, is a process that takes our lives. Some of us need to finish Cave Diving 101 before we risk the real danger that's involved in exploring underwater caves. I think there's kind of an arc in Christian maturity. Rhonda Lawson talked last week here about being welcomed in this church as a new believer, being made to feel safe as a place to grow, and now seeing her life as a chance to start to look outward, to start to come out with that and adapt herself to others as others had adapted herself to her. And I think that's how it works. When you're first introduced to this radical love of God that's offered through Christ, it takes some time to get used to that new identity. It's like a new bride who's still writing her maiden name on forms. She's not quite used to that new identity. Just ask Jake's new wife how it feels to be called Mrs. Dodson. I think it'll probably still freak her out. If you've recently been rescued from a life of addiction, then it's probably not the time for you to become like addicts in order to love them. Because your anchor isn't secure. You risk forgetting who you are. And you won't love them if you forget who you are. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're a new Christian, you can't share the gospel. It doesn't mean that if God has changed your life, you shouldn't tell people about it, because you should. You should share with the people that you know how God has affected your life. It just means you might want to be careful about adapting yourself to other people in an area where you're still weak yourself. Now, while this is true, there is this kind of arc in Christian maturity. I almost hesitate to talk about it, because it's also possible to go on the other extreme. It's also possible to focus so much on your identity that you forget to explore. It's possible to tie that rope so short to your anchor that exploring for you means never leaving the vicinity of your anchor. I don't hear too many stories from our community of people intentionally loving people, taking so many risks that they lose their anchor. People do lose their anchors, for sure, but it's not often directly from a result of intentional love. I think we can tend to be a community with pretty short ropes in this area. Some of us finished Cave Diving 101 a long, long time ago. Some of us practically have PhDs in cave diving, and yet our wetsuits are still hanging up dry. For some of us, it's time to trust that anchor and start exploring. Well, let's then turn back to the model of Jesus to find out how did he explore. Given that he had this anchor, how did he go about exploring? Jesus was anchored, his identity gave him freedom, and that freedom led to sacrifice, to adapting himself to others. The text reads, he made himself nothing. And that's the question we're asking ourselves today. How do we become nothing? What does it look like to adapt ourselves to someone else, so much so that we become nothing without losing our anchor? How do we become nothing without becoming nobody? How do we become nothing without becoming nobody? This phrase here in Philippians literally reads, he emptied himself. He poured himself out. It brings up echoes of Isaiah 53:12, where the Savior who was to come was said to have poured out his life unto death. Remember that image of Christ before he became human, standing clothed in the glory of the Father? That's the world that Jesus left to enter ours. He traded glory for grime. He traded his power for being pushed around. He traded his throne for thorns. Because that's what it took to love us. He had to enter our world. He had to become like us. He had to learn our language to connect with us. When I was younger, one time I accompanied my father on a business trip to Paris. He had a free companion ticket, so I flew along with him. So he went off to his business trip, and during the day I was kind of touring around Paris by myself, which incidentally, Paris isn't the best city to be in when you're alone. It gets a little bit lonely there. But I tried to make the best of it, and at one point I sat down in a French cafe, and I ordered some lemonade, and I'd taken French in high school, so I thought, this is great. It's an opportunity to practice my French. And I tried to order in French, and the waiter kept asking me this question that I just couldn't get, and I kept asking him, what are you saying? And he kept repeating it, and I kept asking, what? And just went on and on, and both of us were getting frustrated, and finally I said, okay, fine, whatever you're asking, the answer is yes. And he brought my drink, and turns out he was just asking me whether I wanted ice in my lemonade, so it wasn't a big deal, but we both kind of left this experience just completely frustrated by our lack of ability to communicate. And it's right of us to be frustrated. I mean, in a sense, I was intruding into his world without knowing his language, without becoming like him enough to relate to him, to connect to him. You need to be able to speak someone's language in order to talk with them. And that's what Jesus did. He became like us. But learning a language starts with hearing it. The first step in adapting yourself to someone else is to find out about them. Becoming starts with listening. Becoming starts with listening. We often assume that we know what life is like for other people without asking them. But to really become like them, we need to sit down with them. Listen to them without judging them. Ask them questions about what their life is like. Find out about them. People often exclaim in frustration things like, I just don't understand my kids. Or, I just don't understand my parents. Or, I just don't understand this guy that I work with. And that can be a good step, acknowledging your lack of understanding. That's a good place to start. But too often people say that, and what they mean is, I just don't understand them, and I'm never going to. I give up trying. It's a kind of surrender. But understanding takes time. It takes listening without judging. It takes hearing somebody. It's a lot different to say to someone, I just don't understand you, than to say, you know, I don't exactly understand. Can you explain? Can you help me to understand? That's listening. And that's where we have to start if we're going to become like others. We need to listen to our children. We need to listen to our parents. We need to listen to the people in our world. Find out about them. But listening to our world can be difficult. I mean, have you been out there lately? It's a mess. They're not like us in here. I mean, there's all sorts of sexual problems out there. There's all sorts of addictions. There's greed. There's self-centeredness. They have dysfunctional relationships. They have broken families. They're fixed on rebellion. People are angry out there. They're mean. They're lonely. They're confused. I mean, they're not like us in here. Or are they? I mean, come to think of it, we have all those things in here. Come to think of it, I have all those things in my heart. Maybe they are a mess. Maybe the world is a mess. But maybe we're a mess too. And maybe we just know the one who loves us as a mess and leads us out of our mess. So maybe it's not that dangerous to listen to them. Maybe listening to them will help us to understand ourselves. Maybe becoming like them in order to love them is a whole lot easier than we think. Jesus went from being God to being human. His was like a major remodel. Ours is like touching up the paint. I mean, we're not that different. I've never been addicted to a chemical substance, but I'm an addict all the same. I'm addicted to people's approval. I'm addicted to feeling good about myself, to getting my own way. Just because I don't use chemicals to get there doesn't mean I'm not addicted. It's not that hard to become like others to love them because we're not all that different from them in the first place. So who are the people then? Who are the people in your community that God might be calling you to become like so that you might love them? How are you adapting yourself to them so that you can love them better? Are you loving them just as an evangelistic goal? Or do you love them? Seeing them as people, being willing to risk some misconceptions so that they might know love. Jake had a great phrase as we were talking this week. He said, "Sometimes we love people but add, please see footnote to my love." Do we love people with footnotes? Clarifications, addendums, disclaimers, explanations? Or do we just love people, seeing them for who they are and loving them? That's what we want to strive toward, to really love the people that we work with, to love the people that we sit next to in class or interact with on a daily basis, to love the people whose kids go to school with our kids. And loving without footnotes means becoming like them. It means listening without judging, hearing them, seeing them as people. And we want to start there. We want to love the people that we regularly interact with, the people that are kind of in our circle. But sometimes God calls us to go out of our circle, to go to people specifically to love them. That's what Jesus did. He left his home to love others. And sometimes we need to leave our regular rhythm. Are you sensitive to God's leading in that area? Are you willing to go into a community or to certain people just to love them? Now, this is an amazing church for going. We had an elder, pastor, deacon dinner this week, and I heard stories of the impact we're having as a church in Colombia and India, Africa, Pakistan, Thailand. God is using us. People from our body are going. And God's using it in amazing ways, powerful ways throughout the world. It's really a privilege to be part of a group like this. But sometimes for us, it can be easier to go halfway across the world than it can to go into our own neighborhoods, to go into our own community. The event yesterday, our Beautiful Day event, that's an effort for us to start to open our eyes more to our community around us, to start to go into our community. Can we as a church grow in our ability to go into our community without giving up our commitment to go all around the world? Can we be sensitive to what God's doing right in our backyard? And I think we are. We're growing in that area. But once again, the question comes up, if I adapt myself to others, how far do I go? How far? How much do you give up? How much do you adapt? Well, if we look back at the passage and ask what Jesus teaches us by his example, the answer is simple. All the way. Jesus went all the way. We go all the way. Jesus went from being a king to being a slave. He went from being God to being man. The immortal one murdered. And that on a cross. That last phrase is like twisting the dagger. The passage says, he became obedient to death. That much is amazing. For God to become human and to suffer death. The immortal one, dead. But then it says, even death on a cross. The worst death there is. Can it get any worse? Could he have gone any further? So how far do we go? We go all the way. Whatever it takes. We become nothing. If that's what it takes. Even death on a cross. And yet there's this mystery. There's this tension. Because Jesus went all the way. He sacrificed everything. He gave up his very life. But he didn't become a nobody. He didn't give up who he was. He stayed anchored as he went all the way. He didn't stop being Jesus Christ. If he had, he'd have forfeited his mission and he wouldn't have been any good to anybody. He became nothing without becoming nobody. And this can be part of my college, part of my challenge as a college pastor. I'm not a college student. I was a college student, so I have some experience, but I'm not a college student. In fact, I'm several steps away from being a college student. I'm over 30 years old, which in college life is old. I've learned that my college students basically have two categories, college life and old. So I'm in the old category. And I'm married. A lot of college students, marriage is kind of this many, many steps away. They can't even conceive of that. And I've got kids. Not one, not two, but three children. So I'm over 30, I'm married, and I've got three kids. I'm many steps away from college life. And yet I'm called to be a part of college life and love college students. Sometimes that can be hard. Sometimes I can think that I need to give up who I am, that I should stop being who I am in order to relate to college students. But that would be becoming nobody. And then I wouldn't have anything to offer. It's tempting for me to believe that I don't have anything to offer, but the truth is that God does have something in me to offer people. And to give that up would be to give up anything of any use. So I strive to become nothing, trying to adapt myself to connect, but not becoming nobody. I maintain the anchor of my identity so I can connect and offer something to people. And this is the journey that we're on. It's the delicate task of loving people. It's not easy, it's tricky. Becoming like someone in order to love them starts with an anchor, starts with knowing who you are. That knowledge then gives you the freedom to explore. You can adapt yourself to them because you know who you are. You're like the underwater spelunker who has that guideline, the freedom to explore the cave, knowing that there's always the way back. But the cave diver doesn't just explore the cave just for the thrill of exploring. He explores so that he can discover. Exploring leads to discovering. And that's exactly where our text leads next. We don't have time to look at it, but that's what Jesus did. He explored and then he discovered a whole new relationship with his Father. He discovered a whole new relationship with his creation as their Redeemer. And so we become nothing so that we can invite others into the discovery of God's love for us and experience it in a new way for ourselves. We adapt ourselves so that others might discover. We adapt ourselves so that we might discover the depths of God's love. And love is complicated. If you've been tracking with these two sermons these past 2 weeks, I've probably created more questions for you than answers. And I think that's okay. I'm hoping they're not questions like, what in the world was he talking about? I'm hoping they're more along the lines of, okay, well, how does that relate to loving my neighbor who just cheated on his wife? Those are good questions to be asking. They're not easy questions. There's no simple answer. Because when you're really trying to love someone, to adapt yourself to them, you won't know exactly what to do in every circumstance. I think that really loving people a lot of times involves more agonizing questions than simple answers. And these questions are the life of faith. This is what it means to walk with God. Asking these questions of God in prayer, seeking his wisdom, but also asking them of each other. Coming together as a community saying, what do you think this might look like? How does this strike you? I'm faced with this situation. What would you do in this situation? Just yesterday, we rolled out this brand new website for PBC. And one of the neatest things about this website is that it gives us a tool to be able to do just this. To come alongside of people and interact, to ask our questions. So you can go home today and see the spot for my message online, and you can ask, add a comment to it saying, I've got this situation, I'm not sure how it applies. Somebody else can go online and see that comment and add what their thoughts are and ask their question, and I can go online and submit my thoughts. And us together can come together as a community, interacting over these questions of faith, striving to find God's wisdom in them. That sounds like how the body is supposed to work to me. So I want to leave you with the image of the underwater spelunker. From what I hear, it's a dangerous but rewarding sport. So I'll run out and try it. But you have to explore to make it worth it. You don't see the caves when you're sitting on the boat. And to explore, you have to be anchored. If you're not anchored, you might lose yourself, never to return. So let's be anchored in who we are, being confident in who God has made us and how Christ has redeemed us, refusing to become nobodies, but being willing to explore and become nothing, if that's what it takes. And let's pray that together with others, we might discover love, real love, the love of our Father. Thank you.